Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. New York Governor Kathy Hochul proposed a $252 billion budget this week, up about 4% compared to last year. But if there's one thing Governor Kathy Hochul wants you to know, it's that she thinks the state is in pretty good shape. Jung-Yoon Han from the New York Public News Network has more.
The governor says New York has seen a better-than-expected economy. That, coupled with strong performance from Wall Street, means there's a surplus of over $5 billion.
We're investing more in New Yorkers because we have more resources to do so, and we're doing it responsibly.
She wants to put those extra resources in people's pockets through rebate checks, income tax cuts, and an expanded child tax credit. And she's lowering the tax rate for qualifying New Yorkers by 0.2%.
This puts nearly $5,000 back in the pockets of many New York families.
All these proposals, plus an extended tax hike on the wealthy, are Hochul's way of shoring up her standing with voters as she's looking towards her 2026 reelection campaign with mediocre approval ratings. There are other flashy and new proposals Hochul is putting on the table. She's vowed to fund free breakfast and lunch for all students in public schools, but chief among them is restricting cell phones at schools.
By the start of the next school year, every student will be required to disconnect from their devices during the school hours, bell to bell.
Hochul put the price tag on the cell phone restriction, with some exceptions, at nearly $14 million. That's at least $10 per student.
That means during class, at lunch, in the hallways, our kids will finally be freed from the endless disruptions of social media and all the mental health pressures that come from it.
School funding more broadly was a large source of the increase in the state's budget. Hochul initially wanted to cut funding to schools with dwindling enrollment, but now she's pushing for bumps in funding across the board, plus even more financial support for schools in districts that have higher poverty rates. Medicaid spending is also up, this time 14% compared to last year. The governor's hoping to offset those costs through a program which provides home care. She also wants hospitals that are financially strained to partner with stronger institutions. But with President Donald Trump back in the White House and Republicans controlling Congress, Hochul acknowledged federal funding for healthcare and education could be at risk.
Those who are hurt need to raise their voices and direct that anger at Washington and push their members of Congress to fight for them.
Ed Raw is a state lawmaker from Long Island. He says while it's great that the state has a surplus, he's worried that the growing budget might catch up with the state down the line.
My fear is what happens when the bottom drops out and we suddenly say, oh, maybe we can't afford the child care tax credit. Maybe we have to go increase some other tax rates.
Andrew Ryan is president of the Citizens Budget Commission. That's a fiscal watchdog. He says that the current budget has too many new proposals without much to curb spending.
The reality is we can't afford all these programs in the long run if we aren't willing to restrain spending, and there is no spending restraint in this budget.
Ryan also says it would have been better for the governor to invest in longer-term projects instead of rebate checks.
The rebate checks basically takes $3 billion and spreads it so thinly it won't help anybody.
Hochul will spend the next several months negotiating with the Democratic-controlled legislature about her proposals. The deadline to approve the final version of the budget is March 31st. But Hochul's administration is known to have prolonged negotiations over the budget, and it could happen this year, too. In Albany, I'm Jung-Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
Well, after New York Governor Kathy Hochul unveiled her budget proposal this week, local and state lawmakers appear to be on board with a new ban on cell phones in schools. But as the Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shello Levine reports, they're looking for clarity on the details.
Republican Assemblyman Robert Smullen of the 118th District calls the spending plan released Tuesday eye-watering.
It's a quarter of a trillion dollars, the highest per capita spending in the entire nation. It's absolutely unbelievable. You know, some of the policy things, her focus is on affordability. You know, let's talk about affordability by, you know, really giving genuine tax cuts to people so they don't have to take as much of their income and give it to the state to redistribute. When you look at the aggregate levels of taxation in New York, we spend almost as much as California does, and California has almost twice as many people as we do. We spend as much as Texas and Florida combined, even though those two states both have more people than the United States. It's no wonder that people are actually migrating out of New York. They literally cannot afford the tax burden.
As part of Hochul's so-called affordability agenda, the state would send sales tax rebate checks of up to $500 to millions of New Yorkers, totaling $3 billion in spending, as well as an income tax cut for those making under $323,000 a year. Tied to her proposed ban on cell phone use during the school day, Hochul has also proposed $13.5 million in funding for school districts to enact a process to store phones during the day. Smullen supports phone bans, but
what I would like to see is that each school board, the parents that elect those members of the school board or the citizens of the district, have the option to how they go ahead and make that ban into effect. I don't know that a one-size-fits-all approach, you know, it really tends to not work well.
Republican Assemblywoman Mary Beth Walsh from the 112th District says she was anxious to support a state-funded bell-to-bell phone ban, but has come around on the idea.
Reading about it a little bit, I do think that it's a good thing to do on a state level. I mean, just as a parent of six and having seen, you know, particularly my younger children having great difficulty, and we were already dealing with so much learning loss from the COVID years that I think we need to reduce the distractions in schools. And you know, I see that the teachers union, I think, is supportive of it. So I'll be supportive of it. I think it's probably just time to do it and maybe assist those schools that haven't quite done it yet.
Walsh is also in support of Hochul's focus on affordability, but says the definition of that word is in the eye of the beholder.
You know, our revenues are up. So my question would be, why is there a plan to spend those revenues and additionally raise taxes? I mean, to me, that and the overall size of the budget just makes you think, you know, in what world is this comforting to taxpayers that, you know, are interested in affordability? I'm all about putting more money into people's pockets, and I do think that it's just, how do you make all these numbers work?
Hochul's budget also includes $35.4 billion for New York's Medicaid program and $694 million for healthcare workforce development. Democratic Assemblywoman Carrie Warner represents the 112th district. She supports the budget's priorities.
You know, education and healthcare are the two biggest by far components of the budget. So really looking at how we're spending our education dollars and how we're spending our healthcare dollars to make sure that we're taking care of, you know, nursing homes, which I've been advocating for a long time, upstate hospitals, dental care, primary care, and then making sure that our schools have the money that they need and that we're supporting our community colleges.
Hochul's budget also includes $370 million for gun violence prevention programs and $1 billion to support the state's clean energy transition. A final budget is due April 1st. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Aaron Shello Levine.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, where she talked about the governor's budget proposal and also her main effort this coming session, which has to do with AIM, that's Aid and Incentives to Municipalities, which she said her district, which includes the city of Buffalo, really needs.
There's a big focus because, you know, there are five cities in the state of New York that don't have the capacity to earn the same level of revenue from its population base that New York City has or that the state of New York has, and they still have to run municipal government. They cannot raise it all from poor constituents. And so understanding that, I think, is how we even got to AIM way back in the Pataki era. And why we moved away from it, I'm not really sure. Again, I believe that AIM needs to be set at an amount, and it should always be there. These five municipalities should be able to count on it being in their budget when they do their budget every year. Otherwise, the people who are important to New York and important to people like me that are my constituents, they could lose access to service. They could lose access to fire. They could lose access, you know, to police officers, even, you know, educators, because the municipalities won't be able to afford it. And so I do think that AIM is something that should be fully funded consistently. And it should be attached to the cost of living, much like everything else, just like minimum wage. You know, stuff changes, increases happen. It still affects police and fire and streets and schools, and we have to respond to it.
Well, how do you respond to this? Let's go up to the other end of the state, to New York City, where I see New York City Mayor Eric Adams has gone on the Tucker Carlson show. And
I heard. What did he say?
He basically said that the Democrats walked away from him. And he used an example of having met with President Biden over the migrant situation. And I don't think he said the president said this to him, but an aide said to him, a Biden aide, said to him, you know, you'll just have to deal with this tough situation coming through, but no financial rescue. So his point was that we have all these migrants that arrived in New York City. He used the phrase creating their own crime, and the Democrats walked away from him. They didn't help him when he called for help.
Well, he should have actually called for help before he went and greeted them when they got off that bus, first of all. And secondly, he should have put them back on the bus and sent them back to Texas if you knew you couldn't afford it. Don't welcome them with open arms and then cry if somebody doesn't help you do what you want to do to take care of them. Now, I get it that New York is a sanctuary city and everybody's supposed to be able to come there. Yes, I get it. But if you don't have the resources, but you lay out the red carpet for the people to come, and then when somebody doesn't help you right away, you begin to blame them. No, you should have did what the governor in Texas did. He sent them to New York City intentionally because he knew you weren't going to turn them away. And then you will end up turning on yourself in order to try to figure out how to solve it. You should have sent them back. And so I think the mayor, God bless him, is just trying to get a new cohort that he can work with that hopefully won't prosecute him.
That's New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal People Stokes, a Democrat. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Representatives in New York's North Country say they're reviewing Governor Kathy Hochul's budget to determine the impact if the proposals are enacted. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
Assemblyman D. Billy Jones represents the 115th District, which covers the northeastern part of the state. The Democrat says he received a copy of the full financial plan on Tuesday to begin scrutinizing.
She did put in there some of the major points in the State of State address, middle-class tax cuts we'd like to hear about, helping with affordability, transportation, getting more dollars for our infrastructure needs upstate and in the North Country. I see there was mention of that as well. And child care, which I've been a huge proponent on, we'll take a look at and see what the plan entails.
Jones says providing $8 million in funding for more state police to patrol the northern border should help.
I've talked to many constituents and families along the northern border. They have basically strangers coming into their property, spending the night at their camps and their barns and their farms. They're frustrated with it. So we need to increase security for the safety of people there.
Town of Plattsburgh Supervisor Michael Cashman says the border allocation is a step in the right direction for the region.
It's not just for safety, but also for the economic stability and opportunity of our region. Efficient, secure borders fostering commerce protect public safety and the livelihoods of businesses, as well as residents on both sides. However, this funding must also address, you know, the resource gaps. And there have been resource gaps, such as personnel and technology improvements. And there's a wedding, obviously, with the federal government.
The Democrat notes that the town of Plattsburgh was the first in the county and among the first in the state designated pro-housing. He is looking for more details of the statewide housing strategy proposed in the governor's budget plan.
Housing is fundamental to the North Country's future. It's workforce retention, it's economic growth, it's community vitality, and any comprehensive state budget must reflect that. The devil is in the details. I'm, you know, particularly looking forward to getting more information on the nuts and bolts of that proposal as it will relate to the rural communities like Plattsburgh in the North Country.
Assemblyman Matt Simpson, a Republican representing the 114th District, found items that both concern and please him in the budget presentation.
The governor proposing $100 million more in the CHIPS funding, which is our, you know, highway and road funding, which our municipalities and towns and counties are dependent upon for upgrading the infrastructure, paving our roads, replacing bridges and culverts. You know, I'm happy to see that she is proposing an increase. An area that I'm very concerned about, and it's one of those where we need to see the details, is the change to the foundation aid funding to our schools.
State Senator Dan Steck, a Republican representing the 45th District, issued a statement saying Governor Hochul's proposed budget continues to overspend and is, quote, tone deaf, unquote, to the affordability needs of New Yorkers.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has reaction to the governor's budget plan from Capital Region lawmakers.
This budget is laser-focused on putting money back in New Yorkers' pockets.
In line with her affordability agenda, Hochul's spending plan unveiled Tuesday includes increases in Medicaid and in school aid, restricting cell phones in schools, tax rebate checks, a rise in the child tax credit, and no new tax increases. 107th District Republican Assembly member Scott Bendett says $4.3 billion directed toward the migrant crisis is discouraging.
Literally, since I've taken office, the budget has increased over $20 billion. And when you think about a budget, whether it's for your own personal financial plan, whether it's for a business, or whether it's for the state of New York, a budget is about priorities. And the governor has clearly stated that her priorities are not within the citizens of the great state of New York, but again, her priorities are migrant services, and us taking money out of our reserves to pay for migrants, and us to spend all this money while our veterans are suffering, while our, you know, schools are suffering.
46th District Democratic Senator Pat Fahey says she is pleased with the governor's move to restrict cell phones in classrooms, direct more dollars to Medicaid, education, and funding for the city of Albany, and highlight public safety issues.
I will say the one hesitation I have is a $3 billion rebate check, including to $300 to $500 per individual for those making up to $300,000 a year. I'm going to be looking for stronger investments elsewhere there, particularly in housing, particularly in our roads, and seeing where we might help first-time home buyers as well with those with rental voucher needs. So I think there's more that can be done there than a what doesn't appear to be a very targeted rebate.
44th District Republican Senator Jim Tedisco claims the budget robs Peter to pay Paul.
Because it should be increasing, what we're looking at is a lot of tolls and a lot of other taxes in other ways, which are defined as other things but taxes. So that's a real concern. So we still haven't, as I said, the devil's in the details. So we have to look where this revenue is coming from. But it's close to, I think, a 7 or 8% increase in spending once again. So they're not reining in spending. They're not looking at spending priorities.
Tedisco is pleased that the governor included his Child Survivor Privacy Act to enhance protections for child crime victims in her budget. Hochul's applying a $5.3 billion surplus to help offset an increase in Medicaid spending does not sit well with Republican State Senator Jake Ashby of the 43rd District.
I don't understand where the governor is going with this. Instead of finding efficiency and cracking down on waste, she's proposing a 14% spending increase. And this is a continuous problem where we're wanting to spend more and more on government with fewer and fewer people here. How are we going to get the revenue that demands the spending? It doesn't add up.
110th District Assemblymember Phil Steck says there's much to digest and discuss.
The $300 inflation refund, I think generally my constituents would regard that as a gimmick. There are probably a lot of other mechanisms that could be used to address inflation, such as a windfall profits tax. Mention of a tax cut for the middle class always sounds good, but what was notably absent from the budget was what that percentage is going to be. So if you cut taxes, income taxes, by 0.1%, you can say you cut taxes. But how meaningful is that really? So we have to wait and see what the actual percentage is.
The legislature will review the governor's budget before Hochul and Senate and Assembly leaders iron out a final document due April 1st.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik appeared before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this week. Her confirmation hearing to become the next UN ambassador focused on foreign aid, Chinese influence, and anti-Semitism. The New York Public News Network's Emily Russell reports.
Elise Stefanik was one of the first people President Trump nominated to his cabinet months before he took office. At yesterday's hearing, the Republican congresswoman from the North Country described it as the honor of her lifetime.
If confirmed, I stand ready to implement President Trump's mandate from the American people to deliver America first, peace through strength, national security leadership on the world stage.
Over the 2.5-hour hearing with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Stefanik referenced that strategy repeatedly.
America first, peace through strength. President Trump's America first, peace through strength. Peace through strength. President Trump's America first, peace through strength. Peace through strength agenda.
The details of that agenda still remain unclear. Stefanik didn't provide many specifics for how it would play out at the United Nations, but she did suggest a commitment to reforming the UN.
When discussing this nomination with President Trump, the president shared with me that he sees great promise in the United Nations if it focuses on its founding mission of international peace and security.
The United States is the largest donor to the UN. As of a few years ago, it contributed more than $18 billion, accounting for a third of the UN's entire budget. Stefanik praised some of the UN's efforts, like the Refugee Agency and the World Food Program. But she was critical of others, such as the UN's Palestinian Relief Agency. An investigation found that a handful of members from that agency may have been involved in the October 7th terrorist attack on Israel. If she's confirmed, Stefanik said she would review the effectiveness and efficiency of every UN agency.
I think we need to roll our sleeves up, deliver reforms, and make sure that our dollars are going to programs within the UN that work, that have a basis in the rule of law, that have a basis in transparency and accountability, and strengthen our national security and our partnerships.
Yesterday's hearing came just a day after Trump was sworn into office and issued a slew of executive orders. One of those orders was to withdraw from the UN's World Health Organization. Stefanik said she supported Trump's decision. She said the organization has too strong of ties to the Chinese Communist Party.
WHO failed on a global stage in the COVID pandemic for all the world to see, and instead spewed CCP talking points that I believe led to not only false information, but dangerous and deadly information across the globe.
The WHO denies spreading false information about COVID. The organization urged Trump to reverse his decision. Some top health officials criticized an American withdrawal from the WHO, suggesting it would only increase the risk of future pandemics. There were a few tense moments during Stefanik's hearing, particularly when Democrat Chris Murphy from Connecticut asked Stefanik about Elon Musk. At a rally after Trump's inauguration, Musk made multiple gestures that many have compared to a Nazi salute. Here's Senator Murphy.
Over and over last night, white supremacist groups and neo-Nazi groups in this country rallied around that visual.
Murphy asked Stefanik if that concerned her, that those people saw Musk's gesture as a neo-Nazi salute. Stefanik pushed back, saying Musk had not done a Nazi salute.
What concerns me is these are the questions you believe are most important to ask to the UN ambassador. I have a very strong record when it comes to combating anti-Semitism.
Both Democrats and Republicans at Stefanik's hearing praised that record. She has repeatedly criticized the United Nations over the years, describing a, quote, anti-Semitism rot in the agency. Stefanik said on Tuesday that addressing that rot was one of the things that drew her to the UN ambassador role. Senators on both sides of the aisle have already expressed support for Stefanik's confirmation. If the Senate Foreign Relations Committee approves her nomination, it will go to a final vote before the full Senate. I'm Emily Russell for the New York Public News Network.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2504. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.